Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're going to deep dive into President Trump's first week back in office. Yeah, we're using those daily reports from electoral vote. You know, those guys between January 24th and the 27th. And let me tell you, it has been a wild ride. Cabinet confirmations, firings, new policies, you name it.
It's been nonstop, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is just how much Trump seems to be governing like, well, like he never left.
Yeah.
You know, same energy, same approach.
Yeah, it's like he just picked up right where he left off 4 years ago. And speaking of picking up, let's start with Pete Hegseth's confirmation as Secretary of Defense. That was a nail biter, wasn't it? VP Vance had to step in to break the tie.
Definitely a significant moment. I mean, first off, you got to remember that it's only the second time ever a VP had to do that for a cabinet nominee. The first time, of course, was Betsy DeVos back in Trump's first term. But what's even more telling is that three Republicans voted against Hegseth: Collins, Murkowski, even McConnell. So that signals right there, there could be more pushback against some of Trump's picks, more than we maybe thought at first.
Especially with names like Tulsi Gabbard being thrown around for D&I. So what is this super tight confirmation? What does it tell us about the Senate? And what about future challenges for the Trump administration? What do you think?
Well, it definitely suggests Trump might be a little vulnerable here. I mean, if those three Republicans were willing to break rank on Hegseth, and he's, you know, he's controversial, but still a familiar face in conservative circles, just imagine how hesitant they might be to support someone like Gabbard. She comes with, well, a whole lot of baggage and a history of going against the establishment.
Yeah, she's definitely not afraid to ruffle some feathers.
Hmm.
And speaking of controversy, let's not forget Hegseth himself. He certainly had his fair share of it. What kind of impact could his appointment have on the Department of Defense?
Well, he's known for a couple of things, right? Strong opinions. And he doesn't shy away from a little controversy. He's been pretty critical of military interventionism in the past. And he's butted heads with some folks in the intelligence community. So I wouldn't be surprised if his time at the Pentagon is marked by, well, some power struggles. Maybe some policy clashes.
Oh, sound like there's going to be plenty of drama to keep an eye on over there.
Mm.
Okay, now let's talk about those 17 inspectors general who were fired. Late on a Friday night, no less, and via email.
Yeah, the Friday night massacre. Not exactly subtle, is it?
It definitely raises some eyebrows. What's the story there?
Well, it's a big deal because it throws a wrench into the whole accountability thing within the government. You see, inspectors general, they're like watchdogs inside each federal agency. They investigate any allegations of, you know, shady stuff going on, making sure everyone's following the rules.
So kind of like internal affairs for the government.
Exactly.
But why fire them all at once and in such a, well, sneaky way?
The timing and the method, yeah, it seems pretty calculated.
Firing them on a Friday night when everyone's checked out for the weekend, that just screams trying to bury the news.
Definitely raises suspicion. And to add insult to injury, they didn't even give Congress the 30-day notice, which is, by the way, legally required. Not to mention, no explanation given for why they were fired. So the legality of the whole thing is questionable at best.
And get this, a lot of those fired IGs were actually appointed by Trump himself. What's that all about? What message is he sending?
It's kind of like, thanks for your service, now get out. But it could be a power play. You know, a way to consolidate power and cut back on oversight. By getting rid of those watchdogs, Trump's limiting the potential for scrutiny. Basically saying, don't look too closely at what we're doing.
And that could have a chilling effect on whistleblowers, right? People who might be afraid to speak up.
Absolutely. They might be thinking, well, if they can fire the IGs, what's going to happen to me if I say something?
Yeah, not a good look for transparency and accountability in government. Okay, let's switch gears for a minute. Let's talk about Trump's foreign policy, specifically his vision for Gaza. He's still pushing that idea of turning it into a luxury resort like Monaco or Miami Beach.
Yeah, that's been a recurring theme with him. But it's been met with, well, a lot of criticism and concern, both here and abroad. I mean, it just ignores the whole reality of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, doesn't it? And it raises some serious ethical and legal questions.
Definitely a controversial idea. And then there's his suggestion of relocating the Palestinian population, maybe to Jordan or Egypt.
Right, like that's just going to magically happen. The logistics of that alone are mind-boggling. And you can bet there'd be a ton of resistance from those countries. And from the Palestinians themselves, of course. It just shows a lack of understanding of the whole situation.
Yeah, it sounds more like a fantasy than a realistic foreign policy proposal. Okay, let's shift back to domestic policy. How are people reacting to some of Trump's recent executive orders?
It's a mixed bag, really. You see strong support for the things that align with his base's priorities, like his stance on immigration, which hasn't softened one bit, detaining immigrants accused of any crime, keep building that wall, more troops at the border. Those resonate with his supporters who want a hard line on immigration.
So he's playing to his base, as usual, but what about the things that haven't gone over so well?
Oh, there are definitely some of those.
Yeah.
Like his attempts to ban birthright citizenship and pardon those convicted for the January 6th stuff. Even some Republicans are pushing back on that. They see it as overstepping his authority, undermining the rule of law.
It's amazing how some things he does can get support from both sides, while others just ignite a firestorm of controversy.
It just shows how complicated public opinion is these days, and how divided the country still is. Trump's good at mobilizing his base, that's for sure. But can he broaden his appeal beyond that? That's the million-dollar question.
We'll have to wait and see. Speaking of roadblocks, his attempts to deport undocumented immigrants are hitting some snags. Colombia refused to accept a plane full of Colombian deportees, unless they were treated with, and I quote, dignity. So naturally, Trump threatened them with tariffs. It's the same tactic he used with Mexico and Guatemala.
The art of the deal. But it highlights the limits of going it alone on immigration. Trump can't just dictate terms to other countries, they have to cooperate. And this standoff with Colombia shows they're willing to push back. They're not going to just roll over and accept what they see as unfair or inhumane treatment of their people.
Right. They're standing up for their citizens. And Colombia is a major supplier of coffee and flowers to the U.S. If those tariffs go into effect, American consumers are going to feel it.
Oh, yeah. They'll definitely feel it. Tariffs almost always mean higher prices for consumers.
Mm.
And in this case, it could disrupt the whole supply chain for those products.
So it's a lose-lose situation. What strikes you most about all this back and forth on immigration?
I think it's Colombia's boldness that stands out to me. They're calling Trump's bluff, knowing there could be economic consequences for both countries. It shows that other countries are becoming less afraid to challenge Trump's approach, not just on immigration, but on foreign policy in general.
It's like they're saying, we're not going to be bullied. Okay, before we move on, let's talk about the brewing conflict between Trump and Congressman Chip Roy, you know, the Freedom Caucus guy. It's all about government spending and the debt ceiling.
Ah, yes, the battle of the budget. It's a classic clash of ideologies within the Republican Party. Roy is a fiscal conservative through and through, believes in limited government, less spending. Trump, on the other hand, well, he talks a big populist game. But he's shown he's not afraid to spend money on things he considers priorities, like infrastructure and defense. So they're coming at it from very different angles. And it's creating some serious tension. Could have big consequences for the country's economic future.
Yeah, this could get messy. Roy's demanding deep cuts in exchange for raising the debt ceiling, which could lead to a government shutdown if they don't work something out. Do you think he's willing to go that far?
I wouldn't put it past him. Roy's known for sticking to his principles. Even if it ruffles feathers, he's not afraid to challenge the leadership, even in his own party. So, yeah, I think he's prepared to dig in his heels on this, even if it means a shutdown.
And shutdowns, those are never fun. What kind of impact could that have?
Well, for starters, a lot of government services would be disrupted. Think tax refunds, benefit payments, loan approvals, all that stuff getting delayed. And then there's the possibility of furloughs for federal employees and contractors. People's livelihoods are on the line. And the economy as a whole takes a hit.
Yeah, it's a ripple effect that touches everyone.
But beyond the immediate economic impact, there's the whole erosion of public trust thing. People start to lose faith in the government. And it can damage the country's reputation on the world stage.
Not a good look for anyone. So yeah, this showdown between Trump and Roy, it's definitely one to watch. And this isn't the only challenge Trump's facing from within his own party. There's also the whole Robert Kennedy Jr. nomination for HHS secretary.
Oh, yeah, that one's a real head-scratcher.
It's causing a lot of anxiety, to say the least.
Well, Kennedy's history of promoting anti-vaccine views is no secret. So naturally, there's concern about what he might do if he's in charge of public health policy.
Yeah, more than 80 organizations have come out against him, including some big medical associations. What are some of the specific concerns people have about him?
Well, some worry he might try to disband those expert panels that advise on vaccine safety and effectiveness, or even reclassify vaccines to make them harder to get. And then there's the fear that he might use the HHS website and other platforms to spread misinformation about vaccines, which could have serious consequences for public health.
Yeah, especially with diseases like measles and whooping cough making a comeback. It seems like we're going backwards in terms of public health.
It's a real concern, especially when you consider the progress we've made in combating vaccine-preventable diseases and the vulnerable populations that are most at risk.
Yeah, it's a serious situation. Ironically, it might be Kennedy's stance on abortion that trips him up. You know, he's pro-choice, which aligns with the Democrats.
Oh, that's right. So you've got Democrats worried about his anti-vaccine views and some conservative Republicans who are dead set against abortion. It's a strange alliance, but it could be enough to sink his nomination.
Politics makes strange bedfellows, as they say. Speaking of politics, what about the House Republicans' renewed push for anti-abortion legislation? They seem to think they have a real shot this time around.
Yeah, they sense an opportunity with the current political climate. They're being strategic about it, though.
Yeah.
Starting with symbolic bills like the Born Alive Act, which has already passed the House. It's a way to rally their base and test the waters for more restrictive measures down the line. They're also hoping to pave the way for a filibuster carve-out in the Senate, which would allow them to pass anti-abortion laws with a simple majority.
Wow, that would be a game changer.
It would definitely be a major shift in the political landscape.
Yeah.
And it would have huge implications for reproductive rights.
Yeah, no doubt about that. What's your take on their strategy? Do you think it'll work?
It's a risky move, but it could pay off. They're counting on energizing their base and putting pressure on moderate Republicans, but it could also backfire and mobilize pro-choice voters. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
This is going to be a battle to watch, that's for sure. Okay, let's talk about another trend we're seeing. Pro-Trump firebrands who are setting their sights on governorships in 2026. We're talking about people like Byron Donalds and Matt Gaetz in Florida, Vivek Ramaswamy in Ohio, Nancy Mace in South Carolina, Andy Biggs in Arizona.
It's like they all got the memo at the same time.
They're all jumping into the race.
It's a sign that Trumpism is still a powerful force within the Republican Party. These candidates are hoping to ride that wave of popularity all the way to the governor's mansion.
But can they actually govern? I mean, these are folks who are known for their, let's say, colorful rhetoric and their often controversial stances.
That's the big question, isn't it? Governing is a whole different ballgame than campaigning. It requires compromise, pragmatism, a focus on delivering results. Can these firebrands make that transition? We'll have to wait and see.
Especially if they're trying to win in swing states, they'll need to appeal to moderates and independents. How do you think they'll approach that challenge?
Well, they're going to have to convince voters that they can be responsible leaders, leaders who can unite rather than divide. And they'll need to show that they understand policy and are willing to work with people who have different views.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they try to rebrand themselves. Okay, let's circle back to immigration for a minute. Trump's Remain in Mexico policy is running into some problems.
Yeah, that one's not going as smoothly as he might have hoped.
What's happening?
Well, Mexico's pushing back against housing non-Mexican asylum seekers, especially those whose home countries refuse to take them back. It's creating a logistical nightmare and raising some serious humanitarian concerns.
So it's not really deterring migration, it's just shifting the burden to Mexico.
Exactly. And it's straining relations between the two countries.
It also highlights the whole complex issue of asylum. Many of these people are fleeing violence and persecution and forcing them to stay in Mexico, where they might face danger and lack access to basic services. That's a humanitarian crisis in the making.
Absolutely. The situation in Mexico is becoming more and more dangerous for these asylum seekers. Many of them are vulnerable to exploitation and abuse. There have been reports of kidnappings, extortion, violence, targeting migrants stuck in border towns.
It's a terrible situation. So it seems like this policy is failing on multiple fronts.
I think it's safe to say that. It's not effectively deterring migration, it's straining relations with Mexico, and it's creating a humanitarian crisis.
It's a perfect example of how a policy that sounds simple on paper can have unintended consequences. It also shows the limits of a unilateral approach to immigration.
Right. You can't just go it alone on this. You need cooperation and collaboration with other countries, something that's been lacking in the Trump administration's approach.
Cooperation seems to be in short supply these days. Okay, before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, let's go back to Trump and Congressman Chip Roy. That clash over spending and the debt ceiling, it's becoming a major dividing line within the Republican Party.
Oh, absolutely. It's a fundamental ideological split. You've got Roy and his camp, who prioritize fiscal conservatism above all else. And then you've got Trump, who's willing to compromise on spending to achieve other goals.
It's a battle of principles versus pragmatism.
You could say that.
And it seems like Roy's stance is resonating with a lot of Republicans.
It is, especially those who are fed up with what they see as excessive spending under both Democrats and Republicans.
They're tired of seeing the national debt keep going up.
Exactly. Roy's tapping into that frustration. He's positioning himself as the champion of fiscal responsibility, the guy who's willing to take on both parties to balance the budget.
He's definitely not afraid to make enemies.
Not at all. He's playing the long game. And his unwavering stance on the debt ceiling could have a major impact on the budget negotiations and on how the government functions as a whole. So it'll be interesting to see how far he's willing to push it.
Yeah, this is going to be a showdown for the ages. So we've covered a lot of ground already, from cabinet confirmations and those surprise firings to clashes over immigration, abortion, and of course, government spending. It's clear that Trump's back in the driver's seat, and he's brought a whole lot of volatility and uncertainty with him.
Oh, absolutely. The political landscape is definitely more lively now. We're seeing Trump's assertive style clashing with a deeply divided Congress, and then you've got that rising tide of populism and frustration among certain voters. It's a recipe for, well, unpredictability.
It feels like we're at a crossroads, doesn't it? Multiple paths forward, but no clear consensus on where to go. So what are some key takeaways our listeners should keep in mind as we navigate this new Trumpian era?
Well, I think it's crucial to watch how Trump handles those challenges to his authority. We've already seen pushback from Congress, the courts, even his own party. Can he maintain control? Can he get his agenda through? It all depends on how well he manages these competing forces.
So far, his strategy seems to be to just double down, push back even harder when challenged.
It's a high-risk, high-reward approach. It fires up his base, creates momentum, but it can also alienate potential allies and make compromise really difficult.
Yes, it's like he's always on the attack.
Exactly. The next few months will be telling. Will this strategy lead to success? Or will it just create more gridlock?
We'll have to wait and see. Another thing to keep an eye on is public support for Trump and his policies. He's still got that loyal base, but his overall approval ratings are pretty polarized.
Public opinion matters, that's for sure. If Trump's approval ratings keep slipping, it'll embolden his opponents, make it harder to get things done. But if he can hold on to his base, maybe even win over some moderates, that would give him more leverage.
So the 2026 midterms are shaping up to be a big test for him.
Oh, absolutely. A referendum on his presidency. The outcome could shift the balance of power in Congress, and that will have a huge impact on the direction of the country.
High stakes, for sure. So any final thoughts for our listeners? What should they be paying attention to in the coming weeks and months?
I'd say stay informed, stay engaged, and most importantly, participate in the political process. Every voice matters. The decisions made in the next few months will have a lasting impact on the country's future.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into President Trump's first week back. It's been a wild ride, and it looks like it's only going to get wilder. We'll be back soon with more analysis and insights. Until then, stay curious and stay informed.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how this all unfolds.
Absolutely. So much at stake. Well, we've covered a ton of ground today. Cabinet confirmations, firings, you know, those late night surprises. We talked about clashes over immigration, abortion, and of course, that big fight over government spending. It's pretty clear that President Trump is back and he's not wasting any time shaking things up.
Yeah, no kidding. He's definitely brought a whole new level of intensity to Washington.
It feels like we're at a turning point, right? So many different paths we could go down, but no clear consensus on the best way forward.
It's a real crossroads moment, that's for sure.
So for our listeners out there, what are some of the big things they should be keeping in mind as we move forward?
Well, I think it's really important to pay attention to how Trump handles all these challenges to his authority. We've seen pushback from Congress, the courts, even within his own party. Can he maintain control? Can he actually get his agenda through? It all hinges on how well he navigates these competing forces.
So far, his strategy seems to be double down and push back harder. But is that really sustainable in the long run?
It's a risky game, that's for sure. It might energize his base and create some momentum in the short term, but it could also alienate potential allies and make compromise almost impossible.
Yeah, he doesn't seem too interested in compromise.
No, not really his style. The next few months will be crucial. We'll see if this strategy leads to legislative wins or just more political gridlock.
Another big factor to watch is public support. Trump still has his loyal base, but his approval ratings are all over the map.
Yeah, public opinion is a powerful force. If Trump's approval ratings keep dropping, it'll give his opponents more ammunition, make it even harder for him to get things done. But if he can hold on to his base, maybe even win over some moderates, that would give him a lot more leverage.
So the 2026 midterms are looking like a major test for him.
Oh, absolutely. There'll be a referendum on his presidency, and they could completely reshape the balance of power in Congress.
The stakes are high.
No doubt about it.
Well, before we wrap up, any final thoughts you want to leave our listeners with? What should they be focusing on in the weeks and months ahead?
Stay informed, stay engaged, and most importantly, get involved. Make your voice heard, participate in the process. The decisions made in the coming months will have a real impact on the future of this country.
Well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into President Trump's whirlwind first week back.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's been a wild ride, and it seems like it's only going to get wilder from here. We'll be back soon to break it all down, as always. Until then, stay curious and stay informed.